This podcast is meant for entertainment purposes only. Topics discussed are related to weight loss, diet, and exercise, and the views expressed by the host and guests are based on their personal experiences. The Weighing In with Patrick podcast is not affiliated with WWE International, Inc., and the content presented is not endorsed by, nor should it be considered representative of, all the official views or policies of WWE International, Inc. This podcast does not constitute a counseling relationship. It does not offer mental health or medical advice. Always consult with your physician or healthcare professionals before making any changes to your diet or exercise routine.
Hey, Patrick here. We love our Saturday meeting, am I right? But hearing from one another 30 minutes a week can only do so much. We can sometimes believe that we're all alone in the trials and tribulations of this weight loss thing. This podcast seeks to challenge this belief by talking with familiar faces who will share their experiences, helpful suggestions, and insights about their journey. The good, the bad, and hopefully the hilarious. This is about us, you and me, ordinary people working on improving our health, reducing our relationship with gravity, and most importantly, supporting one another. Welcome to Weighing In with Patrick, the Meeting After the Meeting podcast.
Compared to most of my friends, I felt huge. But now when I look at it, I looked more average. I've often thought that she did me a real disservice, because if I could have not been on a diet, I probably would have developed better habits and probably wouldn't have struggled as much. But it put such in the forefront of my mind at such an early age that it's made me diet conscious my entire life, where I think a lot of kids go through that pudgy stage and then they slim out.
Yeah.
So
this week's featured Rock Hill WWE tribe here on the Weighing In podcast is our very own Kathy Mason. She is from Detroit, Michigan, and Kathy is a WWE lifetimer. And during our conversation, it's a two-part conversation, by the way, so this is part one. She shares about, among other things, her family history, being weight conscious from an early age. She talks a little bit about willpower, the magnetism of peanut butter. I really think she's a one-of-a-kind person. And I'm grateful that she accepted my invitation to sit and chat following last Saturday's WWE meeting on October 5th. I really hope you find this conversation as interesting as I did, and I think you'll find Kathy as interesting as I did as well. So, enjoy.
My second guest here on the Weighing In podcast is the one, the many, Kathy Mason, our very own stream of consciousness here at the Saturday meeting. Kathy, welcome.
Thank you.
I appreciate you agreeing to do this. Is there anything that interested you about doing this in particular? Why did you say yes to coming on and speaking with me?
Well, as I told you before, I had never listened to a podcast before this one. And after I listened to your first two episodes, I was amazed at how much I learned about Courtney that I didn't know. Because even though we're very close in this meeting, we don't really know each other.
Right.
So I thought that this would be a good way to, for me to, you know, let people know a little bit more about me. But in turn, I get to learn about other people in the meeting as well.
You mentioned listening to Courtney's podcast and that kind of like, oh, that's, I didn't know that. What are some things that maybe you heard Courtney talk about from her experience, her upbringing, life, whatever, that might have resonated with you? That maybe you didn't know, oh, geez, we kind of have that in common. Was there anything like that?
Yeah, so I did not realize that she was from Pennsylvania. I did not realize that she was Catholic, which I am Catholic. And her profession, I had no idea. I knew she worked at Winthrop. Didn't have a clue what she does. So it was just those things that I was just, I mean, I don't resonate with working at Winthrop, but I was like, wow, you know, I don't know what anybody does really in the meeting. So
where you are from?
I'm from Detroit, Michigan.
Detroit. You're a Detroiter.
I am.
What was, tell us about your family. What was your How big was your family? Where were you in the family? What was it like growing up?
I am last out of five kids. Currently, me and my brother are the only ones left. Mm. We grew up early on pretty traditional, Catholic school, went to church on Sundays, went to visit grandparents, after church up north. Up in Michigan, everybody says up north. It was like an hour and a half away, but if you're going north, you're going up north. Mm-hmm. The private side of the family, it was pretty jacked up. So I have had two alcoholic parents mm-hmm. who fought like crazy. Mm-hmm. So on the surface, we were that perfect family. But I grew up with a lot of trauma of hearing my parents fight. Mm-hmm. And that really formed who I was mm-hmm. growing up. So
you were the last of five. How many boys, how many girls?
One boy, four girls. Mm-hmm. And me and my brother are the only ones. The two youngest are the only ones there.
Was there any weight-related issues in the family? You had mentioned that alcohol played a pretty big role. Any weight-related issues?
For sure. So my brother, me, and my sister Carol, which was the second born, all struggled with weight mm-hmm. From like small on, right? My sister Diane, the oldest, didn't until she got older. And then I had one sister in the middle that she was the only one in the family that never had to worry about weight. Could eat whatever she wanted. I don't know how she got mm-hmm. the lucky draw, but yeah, she was smaller whole life. But like my mom put me on a diet in fifth grade. Mm. So, I mean, I've been on and off diets since I was probably 11 years old.
Yeah. When you look at Kathy in fifth grade, did you see somebody that had a weight issue?
Not as much as I thought so at the time.
Mm-hmm.
At the time I thought, compared to most of my friends, mm-hmm. I felt huge. Mm-hmm. But now when I look at it, I looked more average. I've often thought that she did me a real disservice because if I could have not been on a diet, I probably would have developed better habits and probably wouldn't have struggled as much. But it put such in the forefront of my mind mm-hmm. at such an early age that it's made me diet conscious my entire life, where mm-hmm. I think a lot of kids go through that pudgy stage and then they slim out.
Yeah.
So
what were some of the, like, how was it presented to you? Was it blunt? My father would just kind of come out and tell me you're fat, so how did it get presented to you?
Not at that age. It didn't get, it was just you. So I had to go to Sears and get the Husky pants. Mm-hmm. And my mom was like, you're overweight and I'm going to put you on a diet. And it was frustrating because, I mean, she made your plate. That's all you ate, but yeah, she never called me fat. Mm-hmm. My dad later in life did. My dad was more of the blunt one, mm-hmm. but, yeah, it was just, it was almost like, other than when I wanted an extra snack, like after dinner or something, and she said, no, you've ate enough. Mm-hmm. That's the only time I really felt like I was on a diet, because she controlled everything that went in my mouth. Mm-hmm. So I didn't think about it really, but I dropped a ton of weight mm-hmm. For that age.
Did either one of your parents have weight issues?
My mom had a thyroid issue, so she battled with weight. Almost my entire life.
Mm-hmm.
So my dad, not so much. He had one point when I was very small where he gained a whole lot of weight, but then he dropped it almost immediately. So
do you remember how?
So he used to, I remember when we were living in this house, we had a basement, he would go up and down the basement stairs like 20 times every night. That was his exercise. Mm. And I don't know, all I remember them telling me, because being the youngest one, was that he was pre-diabetic mm-hmm. and he lost enough weight to where he didn't have to worry about that. Mm-hmm. I don't even remember what he looked like at that age. So I don't know if they caught it, if the doctor caught it early or what, but he dropped it and moved on and never had a problem since.
You mentioned that your mom had a thyroid issue.
Mm-hmm.
And battled that most of her life. How, if at all, do you think your mother's own personal issues with weight impacted how she talked to you about weight?
I think I don't really ever remember her talking to me so much about weight as just because I lived with her and I ate what she ate. I do remember being in like fifth grade and, you know, your parents will say, go in my purse and grab $5 for the, you know, newspaper guy or whatever.
Right.
And I saw candy bars in her purse. And even that young guy was like, you hypocrite. We can't have them in the house, but you've got them in your purse.
What do you think that was about?
I think she closet ate. I think she, you know, she was trying to set a good example for us. And I mean, she, so if she wanted something like chocolatey, she would do it when we weren't around, but we went to school and she didn't work when we were real young. So I don't know why they had to go in her purse, but she hid a lot of things.
Yeah.
I mean, you're talking about, she'd take me to the zoo and her pop, in quotation marks, was wrapped in tinfoil. I later found out that's because her pop was alcohol, was beer. She couldn't even take her kid to the zoo without taking beer with her.
Right.
And I used to say, well, why isn't my pop wrapped in tinfoil? Well, you drink yours faster, you know. So it was deceiving like that.
Yeah. So you were how old when you kind of noticed she's got candy in her purse? What's going on there?
I was probably fifth or sixth grade.
Oh, okay. And it sounds like that was a little confusing.
Yeah. Yeah, I couldn't imagine why she would have to hide it from us.
Do you remember formulating any type of theory as a fifth or a sixth grader as to why?
I just figured she didn't want to eat it in front of us.
Yeah.
And so
she's a grown-up. She can do it.
Yeah.
We can't because we're kids.
Yeah. I mean, I was frustrated with her, but I mean, I didn't. Back then, most kids didn't question their parents.
Yeah.
So she just, that's what she did. I just accepted it.
Right. What did your dad do for a living?
He was a fixture builder. Mm-hmm. So he used to make fixtures that the car parts would be cast off of.
Hmm. Did he seem to enjoy it?
Yeah, he loved it.
He loved that work.
Yeah.
Did you know their parents?
No, all but one of my grandparents were passed before I was born. Mm-hmm. I only knew my mom's mom.
Do you know if they had weight issues?
I don't believe they did.
Okay.
Now, my dad's mom was very short and very round, but she also had 18 children.
Yeah.
So, and they were like one right after another. So I don't know how you could.
We can cut her some slack.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, you had mentioned that three of your siblings have passed.
Yes.
Okay. And did they pass due to weight?
No,
weight related.
Mostly alcohol or drugs.
Okay. So appetite in one form or another has been a kind of an ongoing issue in the family.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can relate to that.
Yeah, I would say any kind of, how do you say it when you're addiction? So my mom used to tell me I could be addicted to anything. I'm addicted to peanut butter. You know, and she told me that at her early age.
She would say, you're addicted to peanut butter.
No, her.
She was addicted.
She's addicted to everything because she, so she openly admitted that she had an alcohol addiction. My dad never did, even though he did have one his whole life. So I used to say that too. I used to be like, I'm addicted. I could be addicted to anything. That's why I've always had a strong sense of willpower as far as alcohol, because I'm deathly afraid of being in that part, you know, inheriting that part too, because I know I could do that too. Every one of my siblings drank and drank to excess at some point in their life.
Right. You used the word willpower. What did you mean?
I know that I can't. I know my limitations with alcohol and with food now, thanks to Weight Watchers, that there's certain things I can't control, so I just stay away from it.
I see. Do you remember ever talking to any of your siblings about weight-related issues?
My sister Carol. So my sister Carol and I were very, very close. She's 10 years older than me, mm-hmm. or was 10 years older than me. And we joined Weight Watchers together. We did Richard Simmons together. Mm-hmm. We've done it all together. She had a weight issue from very early on, just like me. So, her and I used to talk about Weight Watcher things all the time.
Right. You said you first got put on a diet when you were in fifth grade.
Yes.
I think.
Mm-hmm. Was it yes.
What did that diet look like? Do you remember?
It was just smaller portions.
I see.
So, yes, she didn't make special food for me, but she...
She was going to control your intake.
Yeah, yeah. So she made my plate, mm-hmm. where before we would just, you know, serve ourselves like most families at the dinner table, right. you know. But yeah, she actually, and my mom was really good about, you didn't get seconds at our house. Mm-hmm. So as soon as the plates were made, before she even sat down to eat, the leftovers were put up and in the fridge.
Mm-hmm. And as far as your peers, elementary, high school, did weight ever play a role in whether or not you felt socially accepted?
Yes, yes.
Tell us about that.
So it started pretty early on. So my last name, my maiden name is Dazer. Mm-hmm. And the kids used to tease me, you know, the Daisy Daisy Bicycle Built for Two song. Mm-hmm. They used to sing that and in a mocking way, like I needed both seats. Mm. And then in high school, I went to a high school, unfortunately, that if you were in a popular group, it meant you were like a size 2 and below. Mm. If people, like a normal size person, you know, normal weight and all that, that was considered heavy. Mm. So it's almost like, unless you were waif-like and teeny tiny, it was really hard to carve into that group, I'd say.
Right. What did your group look like then?
I had a very small group. Mm-hmm. So I just had a handful of, I was incredibly shy in high school, and I know a lot of the Weight Watcher people, I find that hard to believe.
I find that to be a complete exaggeration. I don't see how that can be possible.
Yeah, I know. I've changed. Something happened when I turned 40 and I don't care anymore or something, because I literally would walk down the hall with my head looking at the floor. I didn't talk to anybody. Hmm. If I didn't have like one of my five core friends in a class, mm-hmm. I didn't say a word the entire class time. I didn't participate. I sat in the back. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to draw any attention to myself. It made for not a very good high school experience. Yeah. I did not enjoy high school that much,
sure.
the time in school. Mm-hmm. So my best friend was about the same weight as me, and we're still best friends to this day. Mm. But most of my friends were around that kind of, I mean, looking back, you know, the old thing of I wish I was as fat now as I thought I was back in high school.
Yeah.
In high school, I probably weighed what I weigh now, mm-hmm. but in my high school, that was considered fat. Mm-hmm. So I didn't hang out in the popular group. Mm-hmm. It was all grouped in our. So you had your stoners, you had your popular, you had your geeks. I really didn't fall into any group. Because I was so quiet, I've had a lot of people tell me they thought I was stuck up. Hmm. I was just incredibly shy.
Yeah. High school, not a lot of fun necessarily, but sounds like you had close friends.
Yeah, I had like, we had a group of four that we hung out and we went out together. Stuff like that. And right. then I had a few, you know, ancillary friends that, you know, were in classes too. But I was so shy that if one of those four weren't in the class mm-hmm. and one of the other friends were, I didn't talk to the other friends. I always felt like people were judging me. Mm-hmm. So I just kept my mouth shut.
Did you ever find out whether or not that was true?
It largely was not true.
How do you know?
Because it's so weird when I have people reach out to me now, mm-hmm. like on Facebook or whatnot. I didn't even think they knew who I was. Mm. And they knew who I was. And all I would say a good, at least 75%, probably more, of my paranoia was in my head.
Where do you think that came from?
I think it came from, number one, I talked a lot in my family. Mm-hmm. So, and I was always told, shut up, you talk too much, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And, I got to the point so much that when I was little and I needed to talk, I'd be like, I know nobody's listening, but, and I would keep talking. Mm-hmm. But, so I just kind of had it ingrained in me. Nobody really wants to know what you have to say. Hmm.
And you discovered that it's actually not necessarily true.
No, I mean, you've seen here, I can go into a group now of people that I don't know and I'm mm-hmm. I'm fine.
You seem very comfortable.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it took till I was 40 before I could.
What happened when you were 40? What caused the switch?
I think I just got really comfortable in who I was. Mm-hmm. It's like I almost woke up mm-hmm. and I thought, I don't really give a sh about what anybody thinks about me. Mm-hmm. And it's been very freeing.
Hmm. The people that you said reached out to you and were like, hey, yeah, you were so quiet. We didn't know what you were thinking. Like, it almost kind of sounds like the fact that you were kind of quiet during those years carried with it a sense of mystery to certain folks. And were they telling you, like, we kind of were thinking maybe we should try and hang out with you, but we just didn't know how to approach you? Is that what they were getting at?
I don't think so. I think they thought I was actually rude.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Because I wouldn't talk to anybody. Right. Or I was very awkward and very, mm-hmm. because weight has, ever since that first diet, weight has been on my mind. Like constantly, mm-hmm. it's exhausting.
Yeah,
and I think I just, that kept me quiet because I always felt like the hugest person in the room. I didn't have any value because I was, heavy, mm-hmm. and I did a lot of comparing myself to other people. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I just. Because I've also been around my core friends and then people see my truth, because then my true self would come out mm-hmm. and it would be like, oh, you're, we like you. You're pretty, pretty nice.
Yeah.
I remember my brother-in-law, my sister and him were dating, and he had, because I never had boyfriends really in high school. Mm-hmm. And, he said to me one day, I was being all goofy at the house and stuff because I was in my comfort zone. And he was like, you are so fun. I can't understand why you don't have a boyfriend. Hmm. And that killed me.
What do you mean killed you?
Because pointing out that I didn't have a boyfriend, because I already felt like a loser.
So that's what you heard was, you don't have a boyfriend. That's all you heard.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. I took the negative part. Yes.
Right. So does that mean like during high school, no boyfriends?
I had never had one that actually went to my school. Mm-hmm. So our area, we grew up, we'd cruise at night. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it was, there were three streets, Gratiot, Woodward, and Telegraph. Mm-hmm. And you cruised round and around and around, and that's where you'd meet boys. Mm-hmm. So I had one boyfriend when I was 16 for 4 months that I had met cruising. And then again, about a year and a half later, I had one for a couple months. Mm-hmm. So.
When was your first serious relationship?
My first serious relationship was with that first, I mean, I fell really hard, but I used to do that. So in my mind, that was we had talked about, after high school, we were going to get married, move to California, yada, yada, yada. So yeah, I we saw each other every day for 4 months,
yeah.
and he didn't go to my school. So right. he used to pick me up from school because he was out of school. And, yeah, so that was probably the first time my heart actually, like, opened up, and I was like, I had crushes and stuff. But. Yeah.
So when you were in high school, or maybe even earlier, like, when you thought about what you wanted to do when you became an adult, what were some of the things you saw yourself becoming?
Before I realized that there was no, well, in my mind, there was no way I was going to be able to go to college. Mm-hmm. I didn't know about financial aid back then. Mm-hmm. So I figured if your parents didn't pay for college, that wasn't an option for you. And I knew mm-hmm. that they were not in the situation that that was going to happen. Mm-hmm. But before I knew that, I had wanted to be a teacher at one point.
Mm-hmm.
A writer. I've always had that where I wanted to be a writer. But yeah, once I kind of got aware of like how things work, I was thrown into a graphic arts class in ninth grade, and then I came back to it in 10th grade, and my teacher said, if you learn this skill, you'll be able to make a good living in anywhere you live.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, okay, that's my ticket. So that's what I went to it more because that fit my situation,
mm-hmm.
not so much that was like my passion.
Right. Play any sports or anything like that in high school?
No. So I wanted to play volleyball.
Mm-hmm.
The sun rose and set in my brother. Him and I were super close,
mm-hmm.
and I were 4 years apart, and I just thought that he was the best thing ever. And I came home ninth grade, and we had volleyball. We were playing volleyball in gym, and I'm like, I think I'm going out for the volleyball team. And my brother said, don't do that. You don't want to be a jock. And I didn't do it.
Hmm. Why did he say that? Why do you think?
I don't know, because at the time I just thought he had a problem with jocks. Like sports people,
yeah.
because my brother was a big guy. He was 6'1", and he was large in high school.
Mm-hmm.
But they always wanted him to play sports, and he wouldn't. He played guitar. He was more in the music scene, and I just feared he was against jocks. But later I learned that he had friends in every single group. My brother had tons of friends in high school. So I don't know why he said that. And I don't think he realized it would have that much effect on me.
Right.
I regret that I listened to him, but yeah, I was just like, oh, okay.
Who were some of the other people in your life that when they spoke to you about you, they had your full attention?
Definitely my sister Carol, my sister Diane. My sister Sue was the black sheep of the family, and she passed in her early 30s. She had drug addictions mm-hmm. and I'm had a lot of problems. So I didn't listen to her because I knew she was not right.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, my sister Diane and my sister Carol, definitely. They were, you know, who I went to for advice. Mm-hmm. And
what were some of the messages that they hoped you had received from them on the positive side?
My sister Carol was always building me up.
How? What would she say?
She would always say, you know, I look good, my hair looked good, my clothes were good, you know, you're funny. She took me under her wing, mm-hmm. and we'd hang out together. And so when she told me I look good, I believed it.
Hmm. So you didn't try and argue with her?
Mm-mm. Hmm.
And I'm not suggesting you should have. I'm just, when you talked about kind of like, how when you look at yourself back then through your eyes today, you're like, yeah, I really wasn't that heavy.
I really wasn't.
Yeah. And so I know a lot of us will, when we get a compliment, we do the, well, you know, you're wrong. You know, you don't know what you're talking about, that type of thing, you know. So, well, that's good. Did you ever get any negative messages? And I wouldn't necessarily say constructive criticism, right? But like sometimes the people we love the most can say hurtful things. Did you ever get any hurtful comments from people that you loved?
Yeah. Yeah, my dad was very lacking any kind of tact whatsoever. Mm-hmm. He said what was on his mind, and he didn't care who he hurt. Mm-hmm. And I loved my dad, yeah. But in 10th grade, I was probably like the weight I am now. Mm-hmm. And he was, work was always an issue with him because in that area it was feast or famine, right? He was either working or laid off. Mm-hmm. And doing one of his laid off things, it was my parents and him had gotten divorced. And it was me, him, and my brother living in the house.
Yeah.
And my sister Carol had moved back in. And I said, Dad, we need toilet paper. And he's like, GD, why do we need toilet paper again? It must be because of your fat ASS. Mm-hmm. So
you can swear if you'd like. We're adults here.
And that next day, mm-hmm. I started eating 500 calories a day, mm-hmm. 900 on weekends. I lost 35 pounds in like 2.5 months. Mm-hmm. Went down to like 135 pounds. I'm like, I'll show him. Mm-hmm. And I was not healthy because I was not eating, you know, anything close to a good diet. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can lose weight, but I was eating, you know, a cookie for lunch. Mm-hmm.
A little disordered.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So him and my sister Sue. My sister Sue was always very hateful. Mm-hmm. With everybody. She was brutal to my brother. You know, used to tease him constantly because he was overweight. Because she was always a size one. So yeah. She used to tease me for, you know, just little snide comments. And do you really need that? Do you really, you know, should you be eating that type mm-hmm. thing? And she was very hurtful.
You said 5th grade, first diet. You talked about what happened here with your dad. He made a comment to you, and you just basically took your food intake down to almost nothing mm-hmm. on a daily basis. And so when you hit that particular weight, did he ever come to you and make any comments about the weight that you had lost?
No.
And do you recall you having any reaction to that, response, thoughts? That was that on even on your radar that he didn't say anything to you about the fact that, hey, I'm now 135, you know, now what?
It's really weird because at the time he was dating this woman, and he came home at night. I had to make dinner from the yeah. I made dinner from the time my parents and Clint was in charge of cleaning the house. Mm-hmm. My parents split when I was like 12 or 13. Mm-hmm. And so I had to make dinner. He'd come home at 6 o'clock. We'd eat dinner. He'd shower. He went to his girlfriend's house, and it was me and my brother until the next day.
Yeah.
My brother was in senior, and I was like in 10th grade or no, I was in 8th grade when that started. And, I always excused myself. Like, he's got other things on his plate. He's, you know, he's busy. He's, you know, so I never questioned it.
Yeah. Did your mom ever make any comments to you about, oh, like when you lost all that weight, did she ever say anything to you?
No, because at the time that was fresh into the divorce, and we weren't really seeing her a lot of her.
I see.
Because of what happened with the divorce, mm-hmm. what we thought happened. I learned later when I became an adult and got to talk to my mom like an adult that, yeah, things were different than what was laid out. But, yeah, it wasn't until I moved in with her at 17 mm-hmm. and her and my sister Carol were living together at that time, and they were going to this thing called Diet Center. And so I just started eating what they ate. And so she just controlled what I ate that way.
Right.
Because she still, you know, she didn't necessarily say I was overweight. She just never had anything in the house that could cause me to gain weight.
Yeah.
So I just ate what was there. And
right. Diet Center. So is that kind of like a Jenny Craig type of place where you have to buy their food, or?
No, it was kind of like a Weight Watchers before food. So you got so many exchanges. You got so many carbs, so many, you know, proteins, stuff like that.
A lot of counting.
Yeah, you met once a week. Her and my, so any when my mom would go off of birth control, when she'd go off of her thyroid medication, you know, say because she lost her job, didn't have insurance or whatnot, she'd get really big, like 280 pound big.
Yeah.
And she was normally like 140 pounds. So her and my sister were pretty big at that time.
Right.
And so they joined and they dropped all their weight.
Right.
So when I moved in, they were pretty close to where they were needed to be. So I just, yeah.
Is it safe to assume there was a lot of roller coastering, you know, gain it, lose it, gain it, lose it?
Oh, yeah.
A lot of that.
Yeah.
What did you make of that back then? The fact that we lose the weight, then we gain it back, and then we lose it. And when people gained it back, did they gain it back plus?
It was more me and my sister that would go through that, and we just typically blamed whatever we were following.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like this doesn't work or this isn't working anymore.
Yeah, right. It's not working anymore. Right.
I mean, you're not working it, so it's not working, but,
right.
You know, but even when I was doing my 500 calories a day,
there
were times when it led me to binge because I was starving.
Yeah.
And then on weekends, sometimes I would like, peanut butter's always been my thing, probably because we didn't have a lot of money and that was always in the house.
It was there and it tasted good.
Yeah. It was the closest
crunchy
thing.
Crunchy or smooth, Kathy? Crunchy or smooth?
I prefer crunchy, but yeah. But I would gain 5 pounds over the weekend.
Yeah.
I'd weigh myself Monday morning. Mm-hmm. But back then I was like, okay, back to the 500 calories or whatever, you know.
Have you ever tried to figure out like how many points you might have been eating when you went through the weekend doing peanut butter bidgens?
No, I never have because it was so long ago.
Yeah. I mean, the sugar content in that old peanut butter must have been something.
Oh, yeah. I bet you I went through a half jar of peanut butter.
Wow.
Back then.
Yeah.
Because I would just get a spoon.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Open the jar up, grab a spoon.
Either crackers or a spoon. Because it's not like we didn't have cookies in the house.
Right.
We didn't. I mean, my dad, when we lived with him, it was pretty lean there for a while. So
I'm picking up what you're laying down there because I love peanut butter myself. I'm a creamy Jif guy.
Now I'm creamy Jif, yes.
Creamy Jif. And, of course, I was also a chocolate milk fanatic.
Oh, my husband was.
Yeah, and so it would be chocolate milk sitting next to, like, two or three peanut butter sandwiches, you know.
Mm-hmm.
What other foods kind of had the obsessive quality, do you think, for you?
Chips and dip.
Sour cream dip?
Oh, yeah.
Sour cream and onion dip? Okay.
Yep. Because when I was little, before, like I say grade school age, chips were something and pop were something that we got on a Saturday night in a little tiny bowl where you'd get a glass of pop.
Special treat.
That was your treat. So when I got older and not so much influence on my mom because when they were going through all their stuff, I back to like chowing down on a bag of chips, eating a whole tub of chip dip, you know.
Your mom kind of snuck food.
Mm-hmm.
My wife has talked about that, that she would kind of hide food. Did you ever have any of that going on too?
I did. So oddly enough, I don't remember it so much until this last time before I joined Weight Watchers this last time. I was at my heaviest I'd ever been, and I actually would like go to Food Lion for groceries, right? And I'd get a candy bar and I'd eat it on the way home because I didn't want. I mean, not that my husband's a chocoholic. I don't know who I thought I would have to hide it from, but I was embarrassed of myself for doing it.
Right.
So I'd make sure I was gone before I. And I've done that. It got into a habit, and then finally, when he was eating like crazy during COVID, we were both eating bad, then it didn't matter, but yeah.
How long have the two of you been married?
It'll be 23 years next month.
23. Congratulations.
Thank you.
When you met your husband? Was it like fireworks right off from the get-go?
It was for me, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And what had your attention about him?
He was everything that I never went out with before.
What do you mean?
So I always liked the bad boys. Mm-hmm. I always liked kind of the losers, I hate to say, like, mm-hmm. you know.
Well, what do you expect to find out there when you're out there cruising around?
I know, right? And I've always been a fixer, uh-huh, right? So I always went for the guys that needed fixing. Mm-hmm. And we met online, we talked, and then when we met for the first time, I was like, wow, this guy, he's an engineer, he's going to school, he's, you know, smart, mm-hmm. he pays his bills. I mean, I was not used to that. I was married for 17 years, and I carried the weight of the work that whole time.
Yeah.
So this was, like, so freeing, and it was attractive to me.
I think I've heard you in the past mention that you just correct me if I am mistaken here, but I thought I've heard you kind of talk about how your husband has never ever made your weight an issue. He doesn't tell you have to lose weight or he's disenchanted with your weight, all like that's never been a thing for him. Is that true?
That's true. He does not care one way or another. He met me when I was heavy, mm-hmm. and again, you know, heavy was about 190 pounds, mm-hmm. And I've lost weight, and he's the only thing, he's very I've lost weight several times in the 23 years, and mm-hmm. I worked out like a fiend before, and I got to a good weight. I was healthy. Mm-hmm. And I was eating healthy too, so it wasn't unhealthy, but he's not a real praiser either. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I love you no matter what. I don't have to, you know, tell you that you look great now because you look great before,
right?
Type thing, which he doesn't get that. We need that, but
yeah, right. So either way, you're not getting much feedback.
Not really. I mean, now if I like put something on or something, he'd be like, oh, you look really nice or you look really good, you know, but yeah, he doesn't.
When he says that, do you respond to him like, is that so tough? Like, do you ever say anything to him about that?
No, I don't. But I'll just say, thank you, dear, because I know it's just not. Yeah. Well, and honestly, he hasn't felt real good about his own self. Mm-hmm. Since COVID, he's mm-hmm. put on quite a bit of weight, and I've been there before, mm-hmm. and I know it's hard to praise somebody else mm-hmm. when it looks like they got their shit together and you don't have yours together.
Yeah.
So I give him, you know, I can't change him. He's going to have to change on his own when he's ready.
Yeah.
And anything I do isn't going to help that. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I just.
Do you think he may ever come to you and say, so what do you think I should do?
No.
You don't think he would ever ask that mm-mm. question?
No, because he thinks he knows exactly what he needs to do. He just doesn't do it.
Right. What do you think's in the way for him?
I think he's depressed. I think he's had chronic back issues mm-hmm. most of his adult life. Mm-hmm. He's in constant pain.
Yeah.
He's got an electronic stimulator in his back, mm-hmm. but they only works about a quarter of the time.
Right.
So I think he medicates with food. Mm-hmm.
And you have stated that you work at
Shutterfly.
Shutterfly. What's that been like? How long have you been there and what's that been like?
It'll be 9 years in January. It's a good place. It's mm-hmm. The culture is pretty decent. The people that also work there are what keeps me there. Mm-hmm. It's a great, kind of like here. You know, our Saturday morning meetings, it's mm-hmm. a great group of people. The work's interesting. So I'm constantly doing different things because I document all the equipment that comes in and changes and how to make the products. And they're constantly, you know, changing how they're going to mm-hmm. do the process. So it's always something different. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's the time goes super fast. And for the most part, I enjoy what I'm doing.
Right.
The only struggles I've had in the last, I'd say, 2 years is everybody's older than me now. I used to always be the young one. Mm-hmm. I've prided.
You're older than everybody?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And, I mean, my boss is like 40. Mm-hmm. And so I feel ageism. I'm starting to feel ageism at Shutterfly. Mm. Sometimes I don't think I get the same projects. Mm. It may or may not be true. I don't know. But, yeah, that's been a struggle for me. And knowing that I want to retire in a couple of years, it's almost like I know I'm not going to get much more of a raise. I know I'm not going to get a promotion mm-hmm. because I'm kind of at the top of my pay scale.
Right.
So that's been frustrating.
Right.
But other than that, I still love the work, mm-hmm. you know.
So when you're crossing the threshold into the building every day, it still feels good.
Yeah.
Still like that feeling going in. That's good. How has, do you think, if at all, your job, your work environment, all that that encompasses, how has that helped or hindered or maybe not even impacted at all your weight loss program journey?
Well, as I've said time and time again, Shutterfly, they're called Shutterflies, people that work there. Mm-hmm. They like to do two things. They like to drink alcohol. Mm-hmm. And they like to eat. And there's constantly food.
Yeah.
And, I mean, just like Wednesday night, my boss sends a message and she says, I'm bringing lunch tomorrow. Everybody be there. You know, you don't know what you're going to eat. Mm-hmm. I brought my own lunch anyway, just in case, because I was determined if it was something I couldn't count easy, I was going to eat that. But I was pressured into eating what she brought. Mm-hmm. It wasn't great, but I did the best I could. But it's just there's constantly. I mean, a guy going around Friday with the last donut, going to everybody's thing. Anybody care for the last donut? And it's like, oh, my God, stop. I could have told this guy when he came by, but I was like, no, because – I also make it very, I'm also a Weight Watcher cheerleader, and I will say, I can have it if I want it. I just don't want to count that many points
someday,
right now.
Someday, not today.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't want to, I don't close the door on it, because there are some days I might have a half a donut, or I might, you mm-hmm. know, I mean, if I feel like that's what I want to do and I want to count it, but mm-hmm. so it's just, yeah, it's a total willpower thing. You just got to kind of stay away from that table and.
That was Kathy Mason weighing in for the last 45 minutes or so. I thought that was a great conversation with Kathy. You know, as I listened to her talk about her life, talk about her upbringing, the messaging she received from family members, from, you know, peers when she was young, how some of those messages may have internalized one point or another. You know, I have to tell you, I was just impressed with what seemed to be her resilience. You know, and I think I understand some of those experiences. I think we probably, most of us probably can. Some of that stuff resonates with me. I grew up in somewhat of a similar household, and, you know, being exposed to some of those norms, you know, probably had a lot of, evenings or days that, you know, yeah, I kind of wish I were somebody else or somewhere else, right? And I, you know, I think I understand how a steady diet, if you will, no pun intended, of negative messages can, you know, lead us into those murky waters of self-loathing. You know, Kathy does not strike me as somebody who who does that. And if she did that at one point, I don't think she does that in this day and age. But you know, what I heard Kathy say, while she didn't say it explicitly, was that at some point, you know, those messages probably didn't make any sense to her anymore. And, you know, she did talk about how, you know, when she looked back at some of those photographs of young Kathy, she doesn't see herself as having been overweight at that point. You know, she probably didn't need to be put on this diet or that diet. And then, you know, she wished she didn't have to deal with all that stuff. And, you know, normal kid, right? And the weight consciousness has been part of her thinking for a long time, she said, you know. And I think it's safe to say we all want to get rid of those chains that we're dragging around about our weight. You know, we drag it around sometimes like Jacob Marley in A Christmas Carol, you know. And there's one difference between Marley's chains and perhaps maybe the ones that we carry around, right? Marley's were all about, you know, he forged his by treating people a certain way. And something tells me that, you know, we drag these chains around that have been created by things that have happened to us, things that have been said to us. And, you know, Kathy used the word, you know, she had a lot of trauma in her life, listening to her parents argue. And that's probably just a small piece of it, I would assume. And, you know, I never heard her tell me during the near 2-hour conversation that we had that, you know, food is the answer to my problem, right? And I think we've all felt like that from time to time, you know, food is the answer. You know, if I have this emotion, I need to feed it with this. And, you know, we can use food for fuel, we can use it for nourishment. We can also use it to be defensive, you know. The more stuff that we eat that isn't healthy, perhaps maybe the more weight we gain. Maybe subconsciously we're trying to keep people at bay. And we can also be obsessive about it. I know I was like super obsessive about food. Almost looks like an addiction. But we can also punish ourselves with food, right? I know I did that too. And, you know, I think we can take a page out of Kathy's book. You know, we can just, in her words, wake up and just get to being comfortable in who we are. You know, do we need to improve on some things? I know I do, right? I could be kinder. I could maybe be a little less hot-tempered from time to time. I could be more conscientious, specifically around my house, right? I know my wife would appreciate that. Could I track my food more? Yeah. I know this. You know, I know it's tough to be kind to people when you're always mad at yourself. I know it's tough to be conscientious when you're, you know, you believe you might be invisible to a lot of the people that are around you. It's tough to be hopeful about the likelihood of figuring out your own personal weight loss Rubik's Cube when you're punishing yourself with food or by withholding food in an effort to hurt yourself, right? Beating yourself up about what you weigh today is not going to help you motivate yourself to make necessary changes that are going to lead you to a state of wellness. Start talking yourself with a little more compassion. Give yourself a little more grace. You know, those voices from the past that ridiculed you, maybe they made fun of you, told you you weren't this, you weren't that, whatever, made you feel less than, those voices are probably not even in your life anymore. Or at least the people that belong to those voices. Now it's probably your own voice saying those things to yourself. They're not here anymore. Stop doing their dirty work for them. You know, ultimately, each of us individually, you know, we are our own best hope for figuring this thing out. And my guess is you've lost weight before. If you're like me, you've lost it and gained it back, plus, right? And it's not that you can't lose the weight. If you're like Kathy, so many of us, you know, it becomes almost trial and error. It's like coming to terms with, you know, what will it be necessary to do or not to do in order to get to where we think our real self is waiting. And I promise you, that person is waiting. That person you were born to be, they're just a little ways down the road, and they're waiting for you to catch up. Don't get hung up on these quote-unquote failures, right? Those were just efforts that didn't work out, to borrow from Thomas Edison, right? Use those times when you thought you fell short, just take a closer look at it. Get back into that headspace, perhaps, maybe, that you're in, and just look around. Where could you just make some adjustments? Don't get bogged down in what somebody else said to you, right? I get it. Sometimes people can be really cruel. Practice this mantra from our friends in the recovery community. What you think of me is none of my business. I've always liked that. I think that's great. What you think of me is none of my business. It gives you personal license to just be you. Anyways. This coming week, my wife, my darling wife, and I are taking a vacation. We will be going away for about 7 days, sunning ourselves on a beach. And we thought we would do an episode on how we decide to take a vacation, kind of what that consists of, from start to finish, kind of. Not a play-by-play, minute-by-minute thing, but really only as it relates to our WW journey and the things that we do on vacation that further our efforts to be well. I think that could be incredibly boring or incredibly interesting, depending on what you're thinking, right? But if you have a thought one way or another, and if you would like to provide some feedback to this, your host, please make a suggestion. Ask a question. If you would like to throw your hat in the ring and come and sit down next to me as we have a conversation, send me an email at weighinginwithpatrick@gmail.com. You can always tap me on the shoulder at before or after a meeting on Saturdays. I'm usually there early, usually stay a little later. So I hope this last hour was somewhat helpful to you and that you will keep listening. I hope that when I tap you on the shoulder and ask you to join me for a conversation over a warm microphone some Saturday afternoon or on a Zoom call or something, that you won't go running away screaming, because I just strongly believe that your story is important for somebody to hear out there. And speaking of somebody's story, you can hear part two of Kathy's conversation with me in the very next episode when it's released. Hopefully it'll be released in the next week. And just one final thought. Remember, tomorrow that sun's coming up. It's going to come up whether you like it or not. So you have earned one more day on this side of the grass. Make it worth it. You can do it. Hang in there.
Get out of there, Bear!